This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep. Today, the U.S. Supreme Court considers another restriction on the death penalty. The question is whether executing some people amounts to cruel and unusual punishment, which the Constitution forbids. 2 years ago, the court ruled that it is unconstitutional to execute the mentally retarded. In today's case, the justices hear arguments about executing teenagers who commit crimes at age 16 or 17. Here's NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg.
15 years ago, the Supreme Court drew the constitutional line on capital punishment at age 15. Even though some states allowed capital punishment at 15, the court said there was a consensus against putting to death offenders that young. But Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, the fifth and deciding vote, went on to say that since a majority of the states still permitted the execution of those who committed capital crimes at age 16 and 17, no national consensus existed for this older category of juvenile. In the intervening years, however, more than a half dozen states have raised their execution age to 18, and while a majority of death penalty states still do, technically at least, allow capital punishment for 16 and 17-year-olds, only seven states have actually carried out executions of juvenile offenders in the last quarter century. With the death penalty for juvenile offenders increasingly rare, the legal argument against it now is that a national consensus on the question has in fact emerged, and that the penalty thus is unconstitutional under what the Supreme Court has called evolving standards of decency. The case that tests that thesis before the Supreme Court today involves a horrific crime. In early September of 1993 in Missouri, 17-year-old Christopher Simmons and a 15-year-old friend broke into the home of Shirley Cook. Cook struck her husband was away and she was alone. When Simmons realized that Cook had recognized him, he and his friend duct-taped her eyes and mouth, tied her hands behind her back, placed her in the back of her minivan, and drove around for close to an hour, trying to decide what to do. Finally, they parked the van at the railroad trestle over the Merrimack River, hog-tied their captive, and threw her in the river. Mrs. Cook's sister, Pretty Mitchell, says Shirley was terrified of heights.
I remember thinking about Shirley as she fell from that viaduct through the air, how scared she must have been, how she must have been trying to fight to save her life, because she was alive when they kicked her off that viaduct.
Simmons and his accomplice were quickly apprehended, confessed, and were offered a plea bargain of life in prison. But according to Simmons' lawyers, the defendant's mother talked him out of accepting the deal. And at trial, the jury heard damning evidence about a boy who had no remorse and had bragged that he was too young to get the death penalty. Again, Pretty Mitchell.
They went to school the next day and bragged about what they did, that they beat up an old lady and they kicked her over the bridge or over the viaduct. And the comment that they made was where they were laughing and they said, bubble, bubble.
Mrs. Mitchell agrees with prosecutors that each defendant should be judged individually.
If he can kill someone in cold blood, whether he's 10, 15, or 25, I believe he should get the death penalty.
But death penalty opponents contend that much like retarded defendants, those under the age of 18 are more impulsive and less responsible for their actions. And they say they have new scientific evidence to prove it. Stephen Harper is a capital defense lawyer who specializes in juvenile cases.
Since the court last looked at this, there have been some really remarkable discoveries with what's called the MRI, magnetic resonance imaging. And what those discoveries have been is that adolescents use their brains differently than adults. Areas of the brain that deal with things like long-range planning, organization, consideration of alternatives, sense of consequence, and most importantly, impulse control, those parts of the brain are still developing into late adolescence. We never knew that before.
Former FBI Director William Sessions has joined a brief with other former prosecutors and judges making the same point. Kids, he says simply, are different.
You are a totally different person than you were when you were 17. And these things that relate to criminal conduct may just be on the spur of the moment activity, or it may be crowd induced by what they are doing, by what they are wearing, by what they are drinking.
And indeed, Christopher Simmons, though he had no previous criminal record, was an abused youngster who had run away and was a serious substance abuser. Stephen Harper contends that it is next to impossible for juries to evaluate the relative maturity of juvenile defendants when trained psychiatrists can't do it.
Teens are just too much of a moving target. You can never figure out how developed they are and where they are.
Not so, says Missouri Attorney General Jay Nixon.
That's what the penalty phase is all about. And if there is some level of immaturity for a particular defendant that they want to put in front of a jury, the penalty phase of a case would be a place for that to occur.
Public Defender Harper observes that teens usually go to trial a year or more after the crime occurs, making any evaluation of maturity doubly difficult. Such difficulties are why, he contends, the law generally draws bright lines on questions of age and responsibility. The law, he notes, doesn't let those under 18 serve on juries, or vote, or serve in military combat, or make medical decisions without adult input. Indeed, the law doesn't let those under 21 drink liquor.
Facts in a murder case are always grisly and always tragic, and no one argues that adolescent offenders who do terrible things should not be punished severely. The question, again, is, are we going to impose the death penalty, which is reserved for the worst of the worst, on offenders who we know are biologically less responsible?
But Attorney General Nixon counters that if 16 and 17-year-olds are to be excluded as a class from the death penalty, that is a judgment that the state legislature, not the court, should make.
This is a public policy issue, not really a legal issue.
And yet, on questions of punishment, the Supreme Court does draw lines. Attorney General Nixon concedes, for example, that if his state decided to punish robbers by cutting off their hands, that would clearly be cruel and unusual punishment in violation of the Constitution. Opponents of the juvenile death penalty are trying to persuade the Supreme Court that the penalty has become almost unique in the world, and thus that there is an international consensus against it. Indeed, some 48 countries, many of which don't have the death penalty at all, plus luminaries from Jimmy Carter to Mikhail Gorbachev, have filed briefs contending that by allowing the juvenile death penalty in the United States, this nation has become something of an international renegade. According to the Death Penalty Information Project, the only countries that allow the death penalty for juveniles are the United States, Iran, Somalia, and Congo. Again, Stephen Harper.
Interestingly enough, in the last 15 years, the United States has executed more juvenile offenders than all of the other countries in the world combined.
In the long run, though, while the Supreme Court has in the past and may in this case acknowledge what other countries do, the court has never viewed the laws of other countries as in any way binding on the United States. What makes this case and others like it so painful is the fact that a child, albeit an adolescent child, has committed a terrible crime. Purdy Mitchell says she would not favor the death penalty in her sister's killing if Christopher Simmons had been scared and acted impulsively. But, she says, he had time to think.
They had 45 minutes to an hour's time to decide what they're going to do, and they drove around all that time and decided, oh, we're going to kill this woman. So do you really believe that they should have life in prison without parole? Do you think they really deserve that? That they can watch television? I understand Christopher Simmons got married recently. Isn't that wonderful? He can get married and Shirley is laying in her grave.
A decision in the juvenile death penalty case is expected later in the Supreme Court term. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.